Welcome to Reading the Grid, the podcast fueling your Formula One passion. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Now let's jump into it. We continue our season-by-season examination of Netflix's hit series, Drive to Survive, with a look at Season 3, which covers the 2020 Formula One racing season. We will discuss how the worldwide pandemic affected F1 in different ways, including the team's financial standing, which caused a cascading downstream effect on the development of cars and retention of drivers. We see some unique F1 personalities come out of the shadows and come into their own. And we will highlight how teams and drivers keep pushing the boundaries of rules and regulations to get ahead.
Aaron, I will give you a spoiler-free summary of what happened in Season 3, but you only have me until 12:30. Did you see what I did there? This is a play on Papa Stroll's iconic scene, and he's featured a lot more in Season 3. In all seriousness, due to the COVID-19 global pandemic, the 2020 season was modified after an unprecedented 10-week shutdown to 17 races in 13 countries. There's a Finnish saying that is featured in one of the episodes that encapsulates how Formula One can move on as soon as possible after something so devastating as the COVID-19 pandemic shutdown. Dogs are barking, but the train keeps going. Even with the shortened race calendar, the dogs, i.e. team principals, were barking about some teams' perceived unfair advantages. There was Racing Point developing a car that looked a lot like 2019 Mercedes, dubbed Pink Mercedes. They actually purchased information about brake ducts from Mercedes. The FIA eventually penalized them with a financial penalty, 200,000 euro fine for each car, and also some championship point deduction. Not to be outdone by the actual Mercedes, who developed a quite ingenious dust system, which is a system that has to do with the steering wheel allowing the car to go faster. Red Bull filed a protest, and this time FIA ruled that it was legal, at least for 2020 season. Finally, we are treated to the controversy from 2019. Ferrari had a protest filed against them by Mercedes and Red Bull for using a fuel flow development that was supposedly illegal. This time, FIA reached secret settlement, which of course caused a lot of consternation amongst the teams. There also were some very satisfying revenge arcs that were seasons in the making. Pierre Gasly showed Red Bull what they were missing by producing his first win. Valtteri Bottas asserted himself very passive-aggressively by fighting against being considered just a wingman. And Sergio Perez raged very productively on track against being kicked out of Racing Point for reasons that had nothing to do with his performance. And he got a very nice reward at the end that we will discuss later in the episode.
Romain Grosjean's crash in the 2020 Bahrain Grand Prix was a heart-stopping moment that defied all odds, a fiery explosion that split his car in half, engulfed it in flames, and yet against all expectations, he emerged from the inferno miraculously alive. It was a scene straight out of a Hollywood thriller, but this was real life. It cemented Grosjean's legacy as the man who walked out of the fire. We will discuss this later in the episode because it happened to be my very first Drive to Survive episode that I ever watched, which started me on my path to F1. But first, let's talk about the season itself. If you have not watched or are unfamiliar with the drama of the 2020 Formula One season, this is your warning that we will be giving away spoilers. Let's discuss who stood out in Season 3 and why, apart from the crash.
Well, the first person who comes to mind is Valtteri Bottas, who finally found his inner bastard. Obviously, nobody wants to be a number two driver, and it was excruciatingly painful to see how Bottas was asked to give up a win in 2018 Sochi Grand Prix to Lewis Hamilton, and then having his team principal, Toto Wolff, call him a great wingman. You can see how hurt Bottas was, and he didn't hold back in the press conference afterward. 2 years later, talk about revenge served cold. It was very satisfying to see Bottas quietly set up a win that neither his team nor Lewis saw coming. First, he used his experience to determine that the best qualifying position on the track was actually third, not first or second. Second, he used his ingenuity to ensure that he did not qualify in wingman position by giving Max Verstappen a toe, which is punching a hole in the air so that Max could go faster. Third, he used his reputation to confuse his team into thinking that he did not know what he was doing when he gave Max a toe. Finally, with Lewis's mistake during practice start and ensuing penalty, Bottas used his talent and skills to win with a great radio call. To whom it may concern, F you. The title of the episode where he was featured was very apt. Nobody's fool.
You also see in that episode, Nobody's Fool, Bottas's cunningness as a number two, because as we have talked about so many times, no one truly wants to be a number two or a wingman. But when your teammate is a world champion and wins for the seventh time that season, you're number three. Your team is first, your teammate is second, and then you are third. And that is really difficult. It was surprising to see Valtteri get those elbows out, but as he even said, I wouldn't be in the sport if I wasn't a little bit selfish sometimes, even though Netflix did come at Lewis in a bit of a negative light. And, you know, was that intentional? I don't know. To me, the show needed to create a quote unquote villain or to take an unfair shot at Hamilton. We see him actually get two 10-second penalties in the racing season. One was in that race in particular in Sochi. He was given some bad advice from Bono about where he could start from the pit lane. This is where I think we really need to go back to the discussion on stewards and having them be uniform and how they interpret and or apply penalties to situations and implement rules. He had to come into the pit lane and serve the penalty instead of having it applied at the end. It made it appear that they were trying to hold him back from tying Michael Schumacher's record. But I mean, we don't really know. It's a televised drama and we only see snippets that they want us to see. But it did appear that they were trying to put Lewis in a bad light and come at him, which he commented to the media on.
That is fair. I just want to say that it's interesting to see that whether that Netflix highlighting this, but it seems the closer the championship race is, the more mistakes they show Lewis making. And is it just a regular thing that happens when you get nervous? Obviously, mistakes creep in. One thing about Max Verstappen is that he knows those rules backwards and forwards. He doesn't need GP, his race engineer, to tell him, do this, do that. There was actually a race in 2024 where a bunch of drivers made what we thought was a false start, but the one person who never moved was Max. And I don't think many other drivers, even Lewis, are that attuned to every little rule that's in the rule book. So I think in this one, you see Lewis is probably more instinctive driver, which is always more exciting to see. But there are these lapses that whether it's they're doing or, you know, the team not operating at the maximum level creep in once you start to have a challenger that's getting closer and closer. Another new personality on the grid is the rookie from the 2019 season who's shown a lot more in 2020. And that is Lando Norris, who drives for McLaren. He comes off pretty well, a little bratty, but with a good personality and a sense of humor. I did not buy his supposed contentious relationship with Carlos Sainz, who signed for Ferrari and was in his last year with McLaren in 2020, since as we mentioned in our last episode, Lando is still going strong.
I think Lando thinks he's funnier than he is. Things don't land as well as he thinks they do once he says them. And I think that's part of it. But he is witty.
He is. I think it really encapsulates at the end of the season when he says that with a better engineer, he would do better. And that falls so flat at McLaren. And especially since his engineer is still his engineer and he's achieved a lot of results with him. So yeah, I agree with you. Like sometimes he thinks, ooh, I have this British sarcastic humor that everyone gets and it's not that great.
Exactly. We have to talk about Daniel Ricciardo's Renault departure. Was it a mistake? You know, it's another season, another disastrous team move for Daniel. He was very impatient after not seeing results that he expected with Renault, which they were all hoping for at least one podium in that first year. He decided to go to McLaren. With the benefit of hindsight, we know that this is another nail in the coffin for his F1 career. That even watching it for the first time, you have to wonder if he is exhibiting the best judgment. Not only has he deeply and personally hurt Cyril as the team principal of Renault, but as Cyril astutely points out, he is not allowing for the necessary time to develop the team to become a contender for podiums and wins. And you see it unfold as the season goes on. He made that judgment call really early, and it appears that it will bite him in the butt.
I agree. And it's interesting to consider this career move with Alpine's trajectory. Another benefit of hindsight is just watching what happens with Renault, which later rebranded to Alpine. And it's interesting to speculate if Alpine would be in a different position if Daniel stayed and helped with guiding the development of the car in a different direction. Although Daniel's salary demands, I think at all times, were really, really high. He's incredibly marketable and he has a lot of sponsors. So those sponsors may have had an impact on Alpine's future, which would have been different than we got.
I think it's an excellent point. He really is marketable. He is such a personality that really resonated with US fans, which, thanks to Drive to Survive, is a growing market. That's where they've seen the most growth. But I would say your point is spot on. If he would have stayed with Renault, now Alpine, they could probably be completely different contenders on the grid than where they are now.
Agreed. And by the way, the Daniel Alpine saga is not over after this season, so stay tuned. So we can move on, I think, to our favorite on-track incidents, personal stories, or behind-the-scene revelation. For me, there are a couple of on-track races that are very special, and I cannot choose which is the best one. There is Sergio Perez colliding with Charles Leclerc, becoming last, and then winning in Sakhir Grand Prix, which is the second race in Bahrain. And by the way, he crashed out of the first race in Bahrain. And that ultimately causes Red Bull to invite him to be part of the team. It's a very triumphant moment, but also very exciting on-track action. The other contender for the best on-track race is Pierre Gasly going from P10 to first to win in Monza after Christian Horner declares that nobody at Red Bull is pushing internally to have Pierre back. Again, that was the best revenge arc. Aaron, what do you think?
Those are difficult scenarios to choose from. However, I'm going to highlight the third place battle for the Constructors' Championship. Having Renault, McLaren, and Racing Point in such a tight race for third, with it coming down to the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix as the decider, having so much excitement in the midfield was really exciting to see, to piggyback off of your scenario choices. In addition to Pierre making such a triumphant comeback from P10 to P1 and getting his first Grand Prix win and podium, would also be to having Carlos and Lance on the podium with him. That was a trio I would not have ever expected to have at Monza as the winners.
Especially Lance. Well, the pink Mercedes did its job.
Did those brake ducks coming through? We have to talk about the most unmistakable scene, which is Romain Grosjean's Bahrain crash. It is an unforgettable miracle. In the first lap of the race, Grosjean is shown crashing into the barrier, splitting the car in half with a giant fireball enveloping the car. Obviously, everyone is in a bit of shock. And as Buxton says, there are times when silence falls on a racetrack, and you know what that means. I cannot fathom the emotions that Grosjean's family went through for that 2 minutes and 45 seconds. I know what it felt like for me as an individual watching for the very first time in 2021, not knowing the outcome. The fear, anxiety, adrenaline. I mean, you just immediately think the worst. There's no way someone is going to survive that. The way Netflix presented it, that is a delicate situation, but I thought they did a really respectful job of showing the accident happen and how it unfolded. The way they showed the tension, fear, and concern from everyone in the paddock, and then the absolute miracle of seeing movement and Grosjean extracting himself out of the fiery car and then walking himself to the ambulance. That was such a powerful message to his family and fellow drivers that he was able to walk away from what should have been a deadly crash. Perez and Steiner each commented before the race resumed about what a miracle it was and that Grosjean had someone in heaven to thank.
And I just want to say it was very interesting because in the beginning, I don't know if it's the beginning of that episode or the episode before it, but there was a line from Carlos Sainz that there are no miracles in F1. And right after that, they show you, I still think, like the best miracle we've ever seen. In fact, that moment cemented Grosjean's legacy in Formula One, as he himself admitted that he will always be remembered as the man who walked out of the fire. I also think this is the crash that can be remembered for all the right reasons. Amazing quick work of rescue crews, putting action on the track in perspective, and the train continues on as the drivers, once they're assured that Grosjean will be okay, resume the race and drive just as aggressively as before. As I mentioned, Perez actually crashed in the same race after it resumed. And as Toto says, F1 drivers have a wild desire to drive on the limit.
I think Checo had one of the best quotes because you saw the drivers in their interviews and how you have to compartmentalize and make that switch, and you can't think about Grosjean. And Checo said, "We are different. We are Formula One drivers. We are crazy people." And in some ways, there's a lot of truth to that because I would be so shook up by witnessing that. That's why I'm not a Formula One driver. I'm just a Formula One fan.
Absolutely. So, speaking of quotes, I believe you have a couple for me to try to stop me.
I do. So in a previous episode, Ina managed to stump me with a couple of quotes from an earlier Drive to Survive season. She is up 2-1. Ina, are you ready?
Ready.
This is from a team principal. We do the talking on the track. Your options are Christian Horner, Toto Wolff, and Zak Brown.
Toto Wolff.
Very good. This is from a driver. Confidence in Formula One, I think, is everything. Because if you are not confident in your car or your abilities, then you are going to struggle. Your choices are Sebastian Vettel, Charles Leclerc, Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, you did stump me with that one. Because that was or not the choices. I would say Vettel.
Leclerc.
I cannot believe he admitted to not having confidence.
Well, think about Ferrari's performance in the 2020 season.
Well, that's the thing because, Vettel was so badly performing that Ferrari kicked him out of the team. So that's where I thought the quote was from. Okay, good for you. So we're now 3-2.
Yes, 3-2.
Okay.
Okay. This is also from a driver. There will always be controversy in this sport. There is no peace in Formula One. Your choices. Daniel Ricciardo, Lewis Hamilton, Lance Stroll.
Daniel Ricciardo.
Lance Stroll.
Wow. Wow. Very good. Did not expect that from Lance Stroll.
Okay,
3-3.
so we're tied 3-3.
All
Okay, I have a
right.
tiebreaker question for you then.
Oh, okay. I thought we would
Okay.
continue it next episode, but
We'll
sure.
go for a tiebreaker
Okay.
if you're up for it.
I am. Go
Okay.
for it.
From a team principal. Everyone looks out for themselves. That's fundamentally what makes Formula One. Your choices: Christian Horner, Toto, or Cyril.
I don't think it's Toto. Cyril?
Yes.
I'm just saying because Christian Horner's quotes are usually maddening. So since that wasn't it, I went with Cyril.
Well, that was smart. All right, so you are up 4-3, and we'll revisit that next week. Let's head into our wild card topics or episode superlatives.
So for the superlatives, I have the biggest downfall. And it's very interesting because the episode is named, We Need to Talk About Ferrari. We really don't. They finally instituted the policy of no number two driver. And that is the only positive thing that can be said of their horrendous performance, bungled strategies, and blaming their drivers for underperforming cars. It's possible that the 2019 controversies that we mentioned before in the secret settlement really hampered their development of 2020 cars. But I think the biggest evidence of this downfall is that they joined the protest against Racing Point, and Mercedes and Red Bull did not. So they didn't even consider Racing Point significant enough to protest. And the fact that Ferrari did and the teams that joined is usually were a lot lower in the standings than them just shows you how far they fell.
Ferrari in 2020 actually landed in the constructors behind Racing Point and behind Renault. So they were number six We'd have to Google and dig into when was the last time Ferrari was number six in the Constructors' Championship. My superlative would be for most surprising team principal decision, with Haas firing Grosjean and Magnussen so late in the season. I think that was the part that really got me because, as they both said, most positions were already filled. So that was extremely difficult, although it turned out to be pretty serendipitous for Grosjean. For Magnussen, that was just unfortunate that it was at the end of the season. And it was a bit surprising that he went for Mick Schumacher because he was looking for German sponsors, and then Nikita Mazepin again for the sake of sponsors. So I know the team is in a unique position and they need sponsors to continue. That was just a bit more obvious than Haas has been in putting the needs of the team first like that.
I think it's the pandemic that really pushed that decision along because the financial straits of Haas got so dire. And then you hear Gene Haas saying he will not invest any more money. So money has to come from somewhere. And unfortunately, sponsors have ideas of who their drivers should be. And I just want to say one thing about the drivers leaving Haas. What they showed of their goodbyes was extremely moving and actually make me appreciate Günther Steiner as team principal more.
It is time for your lost to time segment. What do you have for us from this episode?
For those moments that resonate now more than when I first watched, it was another Finnish phrase, forget Formula One, let's look at the swans. I love that. The other one, when Carlos Sainz said that there are 20 drivers that have similar talent as he does, he can achieve more with fitness and mentality. I actually think he's more talented than some drivers on the grid, but I also think there are some drivers on the grid that are more talented than him. So that was an interesting reflection. And finally, we have a very profound statement from the one and only Lance Stroll. Sometimes you love the sport, but it does not love you back, which I think is extremely profound and can apply to fans, to drivers, to team principals, pretty much anyone interested and involved with F1.
What are your overall season takeaways for the pandemic affected season, Drive to Survive season three, or the 2020 race year?
If this season of Drive to Survive, especially that episode, Man on Fire, with Romain Grosjean, an incident, did not grab your attention, then I do not think anything will. I still think that season one is superior, but season three punctuates all of the thoughts and feelings about Formula One with a literal phoenix rising out of the ashes. It will be interesting to see if the other seasons of Drive to Survive live up to the drama of the seasons we reviewed so far, but I have a feeling that season four, or the 2021 racing season, will provide intensity and emotions that are just as strong.
As we prepare for season four of Drive to Survive or the 2021 racing season, we see that Red Bull dethrones Mercedes and ends their 6-year dominance of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Max is clearly charging because more often than not, it was Hamilton, Bottas, and Verstappen on pole or in the top three. Often you even heard how Max split the silver arrows. And instead of a front row lockout for Mercedes, it would be Mercedes, Red Bull, Mercedes. With Red Bull signing Perez at the very end of the season, who finished fourth in the Drivers' Championship in 2020, you really see how the stage is set for a showdown between Mercedes and Red Bull in 2021. And to quickly address a current silly season rumor regarding Checo, they're saying that he might be going to Cadillac. And if you look at his 10-year career, he performed really strongly in the midfield. So it could be really exciting for him to be back at Cadillac as they develop that team.
That could be very intriguing. And I don't know if you also heard a rumor about Bottas being considered for Cadillac as well. And just on the topic of Bottas, so as you mentioned, Lewis Hamilton, Max, and Bottas ended up being in the top three a lot in the 2020 season. The fact that there's a meme, it's called Ham Ver Bot, basically the three letters of their name and usually how they ended up on the podium. So everyone, sometimes you see who's going to be Ham Ver Bot this year. So unfortunately, Bottas is not on the grid for 2025, but with Cadillac, he may have a chance to come back.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
We'd also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a shout out to your F1 revenge seeker. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.